edge news and analysis on demand. This is PID Radio.
Catapult of propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Working without a map. This is Off-Road Friday on The Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
It's 437. I'm Derek Gilbert. The Drive brought to you by Midmobile.com, where you can sell your car right now for $25. Midmobile.com, full of cars and trucks exclusively for mid-Missouri buyers and sellers. If you have a car to sell, list it now for $25 until it sells at MIDMOBILE.com. On your mark, get set, sold. Severe weather around the area this afternoon. We've had some tornado warnings to the southeast, Phelps County, and headed towards the St. Louis area. We'll keep an eye on the sky this afternoon as we continue through Off-Road Friday. Things will cool down, though, for the weekend. It should be pleasant once the rain rolls through, and we'll look for you tomorrow at Stevens Lake Park for the American Heart Association's annual Heart Walk. It's the Columbia Start Heart Walk, the idea being to start walking to help your heart. It's to raise money for the American Heart Association, and I am honored to be a co-MC with Angie Bailey of KOMU TV Channel 8. Be there tomorrow morning between 8 and noon. You are welcome. If you've not registered yet, you can still come out and participate, and we'll see you there at Stevens Lake Park tomorrow morning from 8 to noon for the American Heart Association. Now, Off-Road Friday. If you're not familiar with it, it's the day of the week that we toss out the format map and let our curiosity guide the show where it will. And our guest this afternoon is a guy who has definitely traveled the back roads of the human experience. He's the author of a new book called Nephilim Stargates. And we welcome Tom Horn back to the Eagle 93.9. Tom, hello. How are you doing?
Hi, Derek. Thanks for having me on your show again. It's always a pleasure to be on with one of America's top talk show hosts, statesmen, and scholars.
You're too kind. You're too kind. Tom, I should mention, is a frequent guest of George Norrie's on Coast to Coast AM here on the Eagle 93.9. In fact, George was on Wednesday, told me to say hello.
Well, tell him I said hi back.
Well, next time we talk to him, I will. So, now, Nephilim Stargates, it's an interesting title. Stargate SG-1, of course, has been a long-running show on the Sci-Fi Channel. The movie Stargate with Kurt Russell sort of kicked that whole thing off. Anything to do with ancient Egypt and who might have built the pyramids and their belief system is fascinating to us. But you tie this together with the ancient pantheon of Greek and Roman gods and modern embryonic stem cell technology and transhumanism. And so over the next 90 minutes or so, we're going to try and take a whack at all of this and explain why we in 21st century Missouri should care about all this stuff. So, Tom, Nephilim Stargates, what is the basic overview of the book?
Well, you know, as you know, we released the first book, The Ahriman Gate, over a year ago. And by the way, it continues to rank in the top CBA sales. We just came a few weeks ago from this year's CBA convention. And it was still listed as number 13 in the CBA sales after almost 24 months, about 20 months. So we're really happy about that.
That's awesome.
And this, you know, the irony of this is the first book, of course, was fiction. But that book has done so much to open the door for us to have the opportunity to talk about issues like transhumanism and, excuse me, more specifically, biotechnology as it relates to transgenics, genetic modification, excuse me, and even eventually the whole idea behind post-humanism, where the transhumanist philosophy sees us as going. I should also say that this new book that you mentioned, Nephilim Stargates, the Year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers, this book actually grew out of the research that we were doing when we were writing The Ahriman Gate. We wanted even though it was fiction, we wanted the science and the history and the theology in that first book to sound believable, so that if somebody, you know, who works in biotech or something picks it up and started reading it, that the portions of the book that are referring to cloning would sound believable.
Mm-hmm.
And so, over a period of actually quite a few months, I mean, altogether probably 24 months, we were just in the process of doing the research, and we wound up with something like somewhere between 1,600 and 2,000 pages of research material. And then once the novel came out, I was doing so many shows, still am doing so many shows. I'm doing maybe 5 or 6 radio shows a week even now. This is 24 months after the book came out, and I actually have to turn down a lot of shows. I have my favorites. I have to tell you that you've always been one of them. And, of course, always love going on with George Norrie. But in any case, it opened this door to talk about this bigger subject, and eventually after 24 months, and it's still just as hot as a firecracker, I thought, you know, what I should do is take the real research, because that's what we're really talking about anyway, and put that out in the form of a book. And now I will I'll let go of a secret here. First time you get the secret. Nobody's known it yet. But I've come across information since the book Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012, and the year The Return of the Watchers came out. I'm going to re-release this book in a larger version towards the end of this year. I'm going to give it away free to anybody who buys the current version of the book, so nobody's going to get burned on buying it now. But it's going to have probably another 5 to 7 chapters and some images in the book that's going to come out. It's a top secret thing. Well, I'm not talking about this at all with anybody right now, but I am doing the work. And the only reason this happened is because it's related information that happened right after this current version of the book come out. But anyway, the bottom line in a synopsis, Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012, and the Return of the Watchers is a book that really takes a hard look at the real science and the real history behind the novel that my wife and I wrote together, The Ahriman Gate.
Our guest is Tom Horn on the Eagle 93.9. We're talking about his latest book, Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012, and the Return of the Watchers. It's Off-Road Friday, and this is about as off-road as it gets. Now, Tom, let's lay a little groundwork. For people not familiar with the Nephilim, who are they?
Well, I view the Nephilim as the offspring of the Watchers. And as you know, I was invited this year to speak in Roswell.
That's right. Roswell, the 60th anniversary of the Roswell crash.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I had had opportunities to go there before, and it just never worked out. And this year, when the city of Roswell and Guy Malone actually contacted me and gave me this opportunity to come and speak at the UFO Festival, they actually wanted me to speak on this subject, too, the Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012, and the Return of the Watchers. And as I understand it, Derek, my lecture on Nephilim Stargates and the Return of the Watchers was the most attended workshop this year. In fact, I was just on with Guy Malone on Live from Roswell. Mm-hmm. About a week ago, and he confirmed that to me. And I certainly was happily surprised to see the room packed like it was. And those good people there even gave me a standing ovation, which I think they did because they felt sorry for me. But in any case, it illustrated, Derek, people have a strong interest in where biotechnology may be leading us, as well as any connection that there might be between modern and ancient sciences.
And we definitely want to go there. And it's very timely, by the way, that I know you just recently relocated to Missouri. We're sort of the center of the storm, the eye of the storm here in the country over the stem cell research debate. There's just been a new ballot initiative filed with the Secretary of State to ban human cloning here in Missouri. And we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But getting back to the foundational stuff here, you say the Nephilim are the product of the Watchers. Let's go to the Watchers. Who are the Watchers?
Well, here, and I think this is what made this explosive, and they're turning my lecture there into a DVD that'll be available pretty soon. Because what I really did at that conference was I went deeper than I had ever gone before into my theory about the mystery of the Watchers, who they were and what they were doing, and why that record seemed to change the course of history. Because, Derek, I believe that what the Watchers were doing, and this led to the Nephilim, What they wanted was to incarnate themselves in bodies of flesh. Now, this is important because In other words, they didn't simply mate with women and then have unusual offspring. What they wanted to do was to incarnate themselves and literally become perceived as gods on earth. And I think that not only was their great sin, but that's the record. That's what's reflected in the ancient stories and the mythos and of cultures around the world who recorded an epic event when the supernaturals descended from heaven and had sons and daughters who were sometimes depicted as part human, part angel, part animal. And for people who may not know this, the record of these beings who came down and mingled their species with the human race, the methodology behind it appears to be a record of advanced science. In fact, what looks like traces of modern biotechnology, where in Assyrian, Hebrew, Egyptian, Greek, and these other mythologies, these gods, in order to materialize, to take three-dimensional expression, for some reason it seemed to require the need for them to blend different species in order to create the pathway or the portal through which they could extend themselves into our material world.
So what you're saying, the Watchers then, as they entered in, the Watchers were a supernatural being, angelic beings?
My background is in is evangelical, so I have a biblical scholarship. My honorary degree is in divinity.
Mm-hmm.
So my world view, therefore, is shaped by my background. But I have lots of friends with different world views who look at the same phenomenon that I look at and interpret it in different ways.
They look at it and say spacemen instead of aliens.
They might say ancient astronauts. What I do is I say that all of us are looking at the same phenomenon. The fact is that there is a record that an event occurred. And you know, if we were attorneys and we were defending somebody in a lawsuit or whatever, and we went into a court of law and were able to show that there were different eyewitnesses from different worldviews, different backgrounds, different cultures, but who all viewed the same event and they recorded it in their own way. Now they might skew the data that they viewed with their eyes to try to fit it into their worldview. But what we look for are the common denominators. And this is what I found, was that around the world, there was a record that said the same thing over and over again. For instance, the book of Jasher.
Mm-hmm.
Jasher is an ancient apocryphal book. It's not in the Bible, but it's referred to in the Bible. It's referred to in the book of Joshua, and it's referred to in the book of 2 Samuel. But it's so enlightening, and it so perfectly fits with what we do see in the Bible, for instance, in the Pentateuch, in Genesis, where in Jasher 18, it says, after the fallen angels went into the daughters of men, then the sons of men taught the mixture of animals of one species with the other in order to provoke the Lord, end quote. And from a theological point of view, Derek, we would say that it would not have provoked the Lord if we were talking about hybridization, breeding one kind of horse, a Missouri Foxtrotter, with some other kind of a horse.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that would have provoked the Lord, because He created it so that it could occur.
And here,
whatever was happening there, you have to literally interpret what it says, that men began teaching the mixture of animals of one species with a different kind of a species, and that this happened immediately after the so-called fallen angels went into the daughters of men.
We're talking with Tom Horn. He's the author of Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers. And what Tom is talking about from the book of Jasher, which is a couple thousand years old, sounds an awful lot like what scientists in the UK are demanding of their government the permission to do, to mix human DNA in embryonic stem cell research with that of animals. And we'll continue talking about why we should care about all of this as we continue on Off-Road Friday. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is The Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.
This is the show they don't want you to hear. It's Off-Road Friday on The Drive from the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.
Monday morning, Tom Bradley's got another chance for you to win. In fact, your final chance to win Elton John tickets. He'll be at the Mizzou Arena Friday, October 5th. Tickets go on sale Monday morning at 10, but Monday morning between 6 and 8, your final chance to win two pairs, a four-pack of tickets to see Elton John in concert. Tom Bradley in the morning on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. Our guest on this Off-Road Friday on the Drive is Tom Horn, author of Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012 and the return of the Watchers. We're talking about references to the Watchers in ancient texts. Tom, I think, it was a real eye-opener to me to learn that the Watchers are actually referenced in the Bible itself.
Yes, they're referenced in the Bible. Of course, they're referred to in the Pentateuch. They're also referred to in the book of Daniel. I'm doing this from memory, but I believe it's the ninth chapter of the book of Daniel, where several times he talks about a watcher and a holy one who came down concerning the revelations. But here's another very interesting thing. When we were doing this research, we started out looking for where is transgenics going to lead. This is maybe 12, 13 years ago now, and I was doing research. I was a freelance writer at the time, and I was doing some research for a newspaper that I was writing for. And whatever I was writing about, I came across this term transgenics, and I had never seen the term before. But, you know, trans genes, I thought, okay, what are they talking about here? And it grabbed my attention, and I was amazed to find out that that year, fully one-fourth of all federal research grants were going towards transgenic research. And transgenics, of course, being the blending of the DNA of one species with another species. And at the time, I was just flabbergasted by this because I had never heard of it. And
One-fourth of federal research grants?
Yeah,
that
year, fully one-fourth of federal research grants, and a lot of this was DARPA giving grants to different research institutions for the purposes, and not all of this had to do with the creation of super soldiers. They were looking for synthetic materials, for instance, and they actually went on to create goats that create spider silk in their milk. And things like that, because they were looking for materials that might have a military application. So, and this was the cutting edge. This was a brand new science. And if you remember, you know, 13, 14 years ago, genetics and the human genome, there were a lot of promises that were coming out about cures to human everything from cures to human diseases to the creation of super soldiers and synthetic biology. So a lot of grant dollars were going to this research, still are, some of it into black budgets and some of it into open budgets. But the point is, I saw this article, and, you know, I knew guys like Wesley Smith and people like that, and I thought, oh, I don't understand why some of the people on the faith community are not saying something about this. Well, of course, within 24 months they were, but at that time this was kind of like a brand new revelation, or at least it was finally now being leaked over, you know, for human consumption for the rest of us, you know, to read and get used to and adapt to the idea that these were new sciences and that they were going to have an impact both on our sciences and culture and our lifestyle. And ultimately gave some credence to where the transhumanist philosophy is leading us.
And that's what we're going to continue talking about. Straight ahead, top of the hour, we got the latest from latest world news from ABC, and we'll get more on the tragic death of an infant in a car, left in a car for several hours yesterday in the heat in St. Louis. Drew Davis in the new Eagle 93.9 newsroom's got that. Our guest, Tom Horn. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is Off-Road Friday on the Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. It's Off-Road Friday. That's the day that we toss out the format map and let our curiosity take the show wherever we want. And today we're talking with Tom Horn, as the author of Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers. And we're open for your calls at 874-9390, 800-529-5572. We're talking about ancient astronauts, the ancient gods of Rome and Greek, if you will. We're talking about the Watchers, the Anunnaki, ancient science, and how it relates to modern embryonic stem cell research and the transgenic transhumanist movement. All of that covered in the next hour. If you'd like to get in, again, 874-9390 or 800-529-5572. And, Tom, we've got a young man who's been waiting on the line through the break all the way from Dallas, Texas. We go to the phones now and bring in King. King, welcome. You're on the Eagle 93.9.
Hi, Derek. Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Hi, King.
I have a question for you, Tom. I've been, you know, researching your books, your topics, the whole end time scenario, the film, and Antichrist. And one thing I find with everyone is that they cannot accept the possibilities of, let's say, a Stargate or the possibilities of aliens because of their mind, their viewpoints. You know, it's a paradigm shift to even consider such topics as being real, yet there's a bunch of scriptures that seem to point to the fact, and also historical data. How do you deal with people when you discuss these things from the point of being real?
Especially within the Christian church. That's an excellent question, King.
It is an excellent question. And, you know, I have to tell you that, of course, I was a pastor for 25 years. I was an exorcist for about a fourth of that period of time. And I've held executive positions in the largest evangelical institution in the world, as has my wife. And so there certainly have been times, you know, when when this subject has come up, I've sat down with state superintendents, different people, you know, sitting at a table over lunch, and they want to ask me, you know, well, I read your book, and I'm very interested in what you have to say here, you know. And the good thing is that I guess God has always given me grace with these people, that they don't just come right out and say, I think you just fell off the local star. Here's the thing. I mean, the idea that hidden or unseen intelligence is somehow at times, and for reasons that we can't understand, reaching through from another world and touching us, that's just something that it intersects with our humanity on so many different levels, including spiritually, that we have a difficult time adapting to the idea, and for that matter, because some people might even be afraid of this idea, they really don't want to think about it, analyze it, understand it. They just want to avoid the question altogether. And sometimes it almost feels, doesn't it, that if that is all of this is happening now, it's accelerating now, almost as if it's in staged events that are occurring as we can accept or absorb the ramifications of what this means. For instance, as you said, the bulk of Christians 50 years ago, to them, the idea of alien contact was absurd. I mean, we just simply would have thought, okay, you're either crazy or demon-possessed, but you have nothing to add to the conversation. But then, here's what happened, because I went through this as both a seminary student and then also as a young man who was a youth pastor and then later on as a pastor and so on. What happened was, along came Eric von Daniken with his Chariots of the Gods in the 1960s. And then came Zachariah Sitchin with his Earth Chronicle series. And what at first felt like a challenge to orthodoxy caused scholars on both sides, both the religious and secular side, to start asking the question, what are UFOs? What are aliens? If they're anything other than Venus or
swamp,
you know,
gas, yeah,
swamp gas, or you know, too much chili before you went to bed, or for that matter, military experiments. If there's something besides that, then what is it? And even the government-funded studies into this. What would the effect be on religion if we were suddenly faced with the reality that we are not the sole higher intelligence in the universe? And so what happened then was you had young students, Bible students and so on, coming to their seminary professors in the 60s and 70s, because all of a sudden now this big question about the Chariots of the Gods, you know, became best-selling books, sold millions of copies around the world, and it was a challenge to the creation orthodoxy, to the theory of biblical creation, which had been pretty much just accepted by most Americans up until that point. Now all of a sudden there was this whole idea about the ancient astronauts who had come down, tinkered with hominin DNA, monkey DNA, and they had created the human race, and that this explained why you have these records of ancient visitations, but also why the human race seemed to just appear, civilization at least, in the Mesopotamian basin, seemed to just to appear overnight. I mean, literally one day you have records of people living in caves like ape men, and the next day you have the Sumerian civilization.
Yeah, nothing
literally
in between.
And almost literally nothing in between. And so this was such a forceful argument this idea. And by that time, too, we were being thoroughly integrated with the Star Trek television series and other television series, this whole idea that there are intelligent lives that are living throughout the galaxy in different places. And so, you know, this felt very believable to us. And so what happened was college professors and Bible professors in our universities suddenly were facing a challenge to orthodoxy that they had never had before, and that is, how do you answer the ramifications that are being raised by these guys? So now what happened was you had guys like Dr. Ida E. Thomas, who was a college professor, and he was the president of a seminary in California, and his students started coming to him saying, what are UFOs? What are aliens? And by the way, the reason I know this so explicitly is that Dr. Thomas is a dear friend of mine. Years ago, his book was one of the first books that started answering these questions for me. Years later, I had the opportunity of meeting Dr. Thomas. In fact, I just had lunch with him. He's a Quintarian now. He's in his late 80s. He was a BBC correspondent at the time. He was also a college professor. And he told me, he said, you know, and he's got this wonderful, rich accent. He said, you know, these students started coming to me saying, what are UFOs? What are aliens? And he said, I decided that I was going to do one chapel in which I was going to answer the question, what are aliens? And I did this one chapel, and I didn't quite get through the material, and so I did a second chapel. I didn't quite get through the material. 2 years later, he was still doing chapels. Finally, he wrote the book called The Cosmic Conspiracy, Satan's Last Assault on the Kingdom of God, and it became a bestseller. He's written, I think, something like a dozen books. This has been his bestseller for more than 20 years, and guess what, Derek? His book, because the publisher went out of business last year, his book went out of print, and I now, as a publisher, you know that I have Anomalous Publishing House,
mm-hmm.
I'm actually republishing The Cosmic Conspiracy, and we'll have it out by Christmas. It'll be out this year, so what a wonderful privilege that is. But guys like him came along and started trying to respond to this question. More recently, we've had Vatican astronomers like Guy Consolmagno, who wrote Intelligent Life in the Universe, Catholic Belief, and the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligent Life last year. And by the way, if you get his little booklet, which was published by a Vatican-owned publishing house called the Catholic Truth Society, in his booklet he says that we are now facing a greater than not possibility of extraterrestrial contact in the very near future.
Now, Tom, Tom, as we get toward, kind of bringing this full circle, we're finding now that modern man is getting to where we pretty well accept the idea of extraterrestrial contact, which is something that the ancients wrote about, as you talked about the Anunnaki and their interaction with the Sumerians, which led to the creation of the godlike men, the Nephilim, or whatever you want to call it. The ancient Sumerian king Gilgamesh was supposed to be about two-thirds god, according to the legends. As you mentioned just at the top of the hour, the U.S. government is devoting a fair amount of money, and this is true of governments around the world, into research into transgenics and experimentation with human DNA, with the creating new species of mixed origin, if you will. What is the purpose? What is the end game here that we are looking for that you write about in your book, Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers?
Well, and see, that was the interesting thing, Derek, that when we started writing the Ahriman Gate, we started looking for research on what would be the ramifications, the blending of animals and humans. How might that be viewed ethically and philosophically? But beyond philosophy, what might be the long-term ramifications of the blending of living organisms? And, you know, you and I have had discussions before where we've said that genetically modified crops are already illustrating to us that by blending living organisms, you can impact the environment in ways that can't be predicted. And so my question was, what, you know, blending animals and humans. Now, we're doing this already. For people who think that this is a stretch of the imagination, we're doing this already at the embryonic level. People in Missouri are more educated about that because of current legislation here that's being debated.
Mm-hmm.
But other people who might be listening to this radio show in other places, either online, through streaming or whatever, might be surprised to know that we're already doing this in countries around the world. We're doing it in the U.S., in Australia, in China, in the United Kingdom, where we are actually already creating human embryos that are part animal and part human.
Mm-hmm.
And the Catholic Church, as you know, came out, not the church, but some of the priests in the church came out recently, in which they are saying that if we're going to create these embryos, then it is a moral responsibility of the church to allow these embryos to be grown to full maturity, that we would actually have offspring now that are only part human, part animal. Well, here's the thing. We had started out trying to find out what might these questions be, and this was maybe 14 years ago, and because it was such new science, we weren't finding any thesis or editorials or whatever that might, you know, hypothecate where some of this science might lead. But as we were doing these searches, both in back then in the library and the internet was pretty young, but we were searching on the internet. We were also doing dark searches on the internet. We kept running in to these ancient stories about the gods blending themselves with humans and animals. And then one of the other things that we ran into was research that was being done by leading investigators into the UFO and alien abduction phenomenon. For instance, Jacques Vallée, Dr. John Mack, Dr. John Keel, and others, who found that whatever was going on, and these are some of my favorite researchers because they don't try to put a particular spin on it from a religious or philosophical point of view. They try to just, here's all the facts, here's something that's happening. We believe that it's happening. But what the interesting thing with these guys was that they found out that the paper trail, for want of a better term, that they were creating now smacked identically of what had happened with the Watchers, and that is that from the beginning of time, there seems to be an intelligence that has an interest in harvesting DNA, not just from humans, but also from animals. In fact, Jacques Vallée called it vital energy, matter, molecular matter, associated with three-dimensional life forms, which he viewed as needing to be required for some reason as a construct material for achieving incarnation by other dimensional beings. Well, yeah, that sounded to me identically to what the Watchers had been doing. The blending of animals, the blending of humans, for the purposes of creating a body into which they could extend themselves.
And that's the point of the book that we're discussing this afternoon with author Tom Horn, Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012, and the Return of the Watchers. Why did they want to come back? What's significant about the year 2012? It's Off-Road Friday, and that's where the path's leading us this afternoon. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is The Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Boldly going where no talk show has gone before. This is Off-Road Friday on The Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
It's 525. I'm Derek Gilbert. Looking forward to the weekend because the weekend means plenty of time for a nice, long, luxurious dinner at CC City Broiler on South 10th Street in Columbia. It is an experience I highly recommend. You deserve to treat yourself, regardless of whether you're celebrating something or just enjoying the fact that, say, the temperature is going to be 20 degrees lower tomorrow than it was yesterday. Go to CC City Broiler and find out for yourself why it's voted the best steak and best seafood in Columbia by Inside Columbia Magazine. In fact, here's a great way to do that. The first time I went to CC's, they recommended the Aunt Jackie. The Aunt Jackie is a filet mignon and a South African lobster tail on the same plate. Now, normally, I am not a seafood lover. And as a testimony to how good the seafood is at CC City Broiler, they're making me like food that I hate. Lobster, never one of my favorite foods. Fish, shrimp, I want my protein to come from an animal with four legs, maximum. Except at CC City Broiler. That South African lobster tail is absolutely sweet. Doesn't even need the butter sauce, although, you know, everything is better in butter, but it doesn't need it. And that's a testimony to the skill of Greg Copeland, the executive chef, and his staff back in the kitchen at CC City Broiler. And, of course, did I mention they were also voted best service in Columbia and Inside Columbia 2007? I can testify to that as well. CC City Broiler, South 10th Street in Columbia, the best steaks anywhere and the best seafood, too. Americans invented the steakhouse, but CC City Broiler has perfected it. It's 527. Our guest on this Off-Road Friday is Tom Horn. He's the author of Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012, and the Return of the Watchers. Now, Tom, you're talking about the return of this group of mysterious, supernatural, perhaps extraterrestrial, in some people's views, beings to the not the United States, but to the world. It should only seems that it's mostly here, but we get reports of UFOs from all over the place. Israel has many, many reports. Iran seems to have a rash of reports. In fact, it was reported a couple of years ago that Iran and Russia were teaming up to study these things. Why do the Watchers want to come back, and how exactly is this transgenic research going to help them do it?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you that I don't know that I can even do the show now. I just want to go eat lobster tail at CC Broiler in Columbia.
Next time you're up here, we'll treat you and Nita.
I have this issue. Now, I've written about the year 2012 and the fact that these beings have an interest. They've been here once before, and they have this interest in returning. And when we went to the break, we were talking about different religious ideas about the Watchers, what they were doing, what they did, but that you now have leaders, and some that are very important. I mean, Vatican astronomers like Guy Cosmonolgo, who are now saying that there is a better than not chance that in the very near future we are going to be faced with an ET reality. That either the governments of the world are going to acknowledge that they have found artificiality, for instance, on Mars. There was a news story you might have seen today talking about life having already been discovered on Mars, microbiological life.
Mm-hmm.
All of this is so interesting on several levels. First of all, when you look at the Vatican talking about a greater than not possibility. Think back about what Malachi Martin told Art Bell on his show in 1997, and remember that Father Malachi was an eminent theologian, and yet he placed this time frame of about 10 years on his feeling that what was or is approaching the world would be of great importance.
Approaching the world from outer space.
Yeah, well, he was on Coast to Coast, and Art Bell had asked him why the Vatican was heavily invested in the study of deep space at Mount Graham Observatory in southeastern Arizona, at the VAT Observatory in Arizona. Now, as a retired professor of the Pontifical Biblical Institute, he was uniquely qualified to hold in secret information pertaining to the Vatican's Advanced Technology Telescope, the VAT Telescope, and the project there at Mount Graham International Observatory. And so when Art Bell said, why is the Vatican so heavily invested in the study of deep space, and Martin gave his answer, it ignited a firestorm of interest among ufologists, because he said they're doing this because the mentality among those who are at the highest levels of Vatican administration and geopolitics know or have knowledge of what is going on in space and what is approaching us, and that it could be of the greatest importance in the next 5 to 10 years, end quote.
Now, Tom, we're going to have to take a break here for a look at what's happening in the world of news, but let's hold that thread right there. We're going to pick that up. Again, when the Vatican puts that much importance on something, it's worth taking notice of, whether one is Roman Catholic or not, because the Vatican's resources are immense. And if they're devoting resources to the research of what's coming, then we should discuss that. We should take note. We're talking with Tom Horn. He's the author of the book Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012, the Return of the Watchers. We'll talk about where you can get the book and in just a moment as our conversation continues.
Off-Road Friday. This is The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.
Sean Hannity's Final Hour Free-for-All coming up just after 6 o'clock tonight. And, of course, that is followed by a full night of electronic insensitivity, Michael Savage, the Savage Nation. Although his bumper music on Friday nights is really good. Michael Savage always hosts Rock and Roll Friday. So if you like, 50s doo-wop and that sort of thing, you just listen to the bumper music. And stick around then for Neil Bortz at 9 o'clock tonight on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. Lines are open if you've got a question for our guest this afternoon, 874-9390, 800-529-5572. If you're outside mid-Missouri, maybe listening to the internet stream at the Eagle939.com. Email thedrive at zrgmail.com. That's thedrive at zrgmail.com. You can use AOL Instant Messenger. Send it to the Eagle939 using AOL Instant Messenger. Tom Horn is our guest. He's the author of Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers. And from Bunston now, we bring in Johnny B. Johnny, welcome. You're on the Eagle 93.9.
Hey, fellas. How's it going?
Going well.
I never thought I'd ever hear a conversation of Enochian magic in Columbia, Missouri on the radio. That just blows me away, man.
Yeah, Enochian magic is a little outside the scope of what we're doing this afternoon, but...
Not at all. Right up the same alley. It's real interesting that you should be having this conversation now, because we're coming into an age where we're going to have a correction. The corrupted, anybody that's standing on a corrupted thing will be exposed. That corruption is going to be brought forth, and that's the invisible brought visible that they refer to. There's some awesome times coming, folks.
All right.
Good time to be paying attention to this man and his information.
All right, Johnny, appreciate
your
call.
That's all I was wanting, man. I can't wait to get a hold of the book.
All right, appreciate it. Well, Tom, before we let too much time get away, how do people get a copy of Nephilim Stargates?
Well, they can get it from anywhere. They can ask for it in their local bookstore. They can get it at Amazon.com. They can get it at RaidersNewsNetwork.com. They can get it at SurvivorMall.com. Essentially, if they just go to Amazon or anywhere else and type in Nephilim Stargates, the book will come up. By the way, it's been the number one book in the prophecy section at Amazon.com since the day it was released. And right now, me and Lynn Marzulli, my good buddy, whose book we just published, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, and Tim LaHaye, the three of us are fighting for the number one position at Amazon.com in the prophecy section. So they can get it anywhere. Anywhere they want to.
Well, time is slipping away from us. This goes very, very quickly. Now, before we went into the news at 5:30, we were talking about the Vatican's attention being trained on the skies, deep space, and Father Malachy Martin, who told Art Bell some years back that we should pay attention to something that is that the Vatican knows is approaching. Do we have any idea what this is, and how does this relate to your book?
Well, here's the interesting thing. Art Bell asked him that question in 1997. He was eminently qualified to answer the question. And when he answered the question, why is the Vatican so deeply invested in the study of deep space, he said because the mentality among those who are at the highest levels of the Vatican administration know what's going on in space and what is approaching us, and that it could be of the greatest importance in 5 years to 10 years. And people need to keep in mind, Malachy Martin was, he was not a nutcase. He was, you know, he was a little bit of a maverick, but he was an eminent theologian. He was a Jesuit, and he was in a position to know why the Vatican would be investing in deep space. And those cryptic words, what's approaching us could be of the greatest importance in the next 5 to 10 years, was followed in subsequent interviews with discussions on Art Bell's show, with discussions of a mysterious sign in the sky that Father Malachy believed was approaching from the north. Now, Martin, he passed away in 1999, but not before he allegedly told his good friend Art Bell a secret, which some people believe relates to the space object in his 5-10 year time frame. When I've been on Coast to Coast, and when I was on with Art Bell recently, just a couple of months ago, I asked him about this. He wouldn't answer it. But in either case, we stand today at the threshold of Father Malachy's words, because if you take the year, the 10-year anniversary of the end of Malachy's time frame that the Vatican has discussed what's going on in space, and you add it to the current year, 1997 until now, 2007, we're at the end of his, I don't know if I should use the term prophecy, we're at the end of his statement that he believed that by now something of significance would occur. And I think it's interesting, Derek, that the Vatican this year for the first time has discussed now shutting down VAT. And some people are saying, is it because they learned all that they needed to know? In any case, It's ironic to me that almost 10 years to the day, we're now discovering second Earths. We're talking about life being discovered on Mars at the smallest level, and Vatican astronomers have published several treatises letting the faithful know that ET will not be a challenge to their faith. And now, something that I think that the good Father Malachi Martin would have found extraordinary is that we also have a science for cross-blending species, not only reminiscent of what the Watchers did with Nephilim, and maybe also comparable to what other dimensional beings that we call aliens have been doing, but now we have emerging before us right now, it's already in Missouri and Arkansas's daily news, the technology to open portals of perception that have been heretofore unknown except to the gods of mythology through the blending of species, humans and animals. And you asked me before the break, you referred to the year 2012,
mm-hmm.
which is coming up. And if people read either of my books, but especially the second one, they know that we discuss not just the gods of ancient Hebrew literature, but also Middle America, especially the Aztec and Mayan deities such as Quetzalcoatl.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, we question whether the end of their long calendar and the return of their chief god Quetzalcoatl in the year 2012 corresponds with the ancient Eastern biblical prophecies of the return of the giants in the end times. And
again, the giants are the Nephilim, correct?
The giants are the Nephilim. But in this ancient Mesoamerican theology, it's almost like a hermetic interpretation in the use of their symbolism. And it's really interesting because the legends of these multidimensional spirit beings that we've been talking about in hermeticism, there's this methodology where these things can at certain times in history move from behind gateways. And sometimes this is visualized as happening through statues or persons or even flying winged discs, UFOs, if you will, along this heavenly sky location where they come at certain times in history into Earth's reality. And this goes into the Mayan year 2012.
And is this related to the stargates in the title of your book, Nephilim Stargates?
Absolutely. Well, in Hermetic iconography, the beginning and ending points of the sky are positioned where the ecliptic, the pathway of the sun, crosses the Milky Way. And in ancient descriptions, that depiction is the distance between those two points, where the pathway of the sun crosses the Milky Way, is seen as a large snake eating its tail called the Ouroboros. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The tail devourer encompassing the heaven and swelling its tail. That's one of the oldest mystical symbols in the world. It's found in Aztec, Chinese, Native American, whatever, mythologies. But in alchemical symbolism, the mouth of the snake is viewed as a place of arrival or departure of gods or angels who use wormholes, or in my opinion, and on the title of my book, stargates, in order to navigate dimensions of heaven. For example, the god Quetzalcoatl in this year 2012, Quetzalcoatl was the most well-known Aztec deity. And he is portrayed as being or entering the Ouroboros on Aztec and Toltec ruins. In some renderings, it's more biblical. There's a ladder that's seen descending from the ecliptic.
Like Jacob's ladder.
But in this case, it's where Quetzalcoatl descends from the sky on a rope ladder. But he is prophesied to do this again in the year 2012, the so-called end of times reopening of the serpent portal, the end of the great cycle of the Mayan calendar and the planetary cycle of the Aztec calendar in December 21, the year 2012. And that is a very interesting year also, even according to the Bible code and other theories.
And we'll talk about that as we continue. December 21st, 2012, the date that the sun appears to rise from the mouth of the Ouroboros, the end of the Mayan calendar, and perhaps the end of the age. Our guest is Tom Horn. We're talking about his book, Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012 and the return of the Watchers. This is Off-Road Friday on the Drive. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.
Hey, Sean Hannity here. Don't forget, the final hour free-for-all is up next at 6, right after The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.
And for many in mid-Missouri, they say, huzzah, return to normality. But as we do on Off-Road Friday, after a full week of worrying about the issues of the day, about schools getting out early, and about the heat, and about the political situation here and abroad, we let our curiosity carry us in down the roads less traveled, which is why we call this Off-Road Friday here on The Drive. Our guest this afternoon, Tom Horn, author of Nephilim Stargates, The Year 2012, and The Return of the Watchers. Tom, we were just talking a little bit about the Mayan calendar, the end of the Mayan calendar coming up in 2012. You do a Google search for 2012, and you come up with all kinds of websites and all kinds of speculation as to what is going to happen or what may happen on December 21st, 2012, when we hit that last day on the calendar. What do you think is coming our way?
Well, at exactly 11:11 that day, what is prophesied to occur in the year 2012, December 21st, at exactly 11:11, is that there is going to be the reopening, according to the Mayans, of the serpent portal. Now, that's the end of the great cycle of the Mayan calendar. It's tens of thousands of years old. It's an epic moment in both Maya and Aztec history. And they say something's going to happen. Now, according to I mentioned before we went to the break that the Bible Code talks about this. If a person reads the book, the Bible Code, they'll find out that the world is going to end on that date with a collision with a meteor or an asteroid or a comet.
Hmm.
There's another theory called the novelty theory that claims that time itself is a fractal wave, and it is going to end abruptly in 2012. You might even remember, Derek, the popular television show X-Files.
Right.
They speculated that the Earth will be colonized by aliens beginning on December 2012. But the Mayan calendar actually is a little different than what most people will use it to interpret in terms of speculating about the end of times, because they don't really describe 2012 as the end of the world. They describe it as the next period in a human for one of a better term, human evolution.
Now, the Bible speaks, though, of the coming of the end of the age. Isn't that similar terminology?
It is, and, you know, the Bible also talks about the return of our Messiah, and the Mayans also talk about the return of their great god, Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent. And the interesting thing here is when you get into the symbolisms, the feathered equates to flying technology,
mm-hmm.
while serpent refers to the heavenly wormhole stargate, the Ouroboros. But in any case, this Quetzalcoatl is supposed to descend through a hole in the sky, or in another interpretation, on a rope ladder.
Jacob's ladder.
And there's even another version of him sailing down in a winged ship, which is very similar to some of the ancient Egyptian and Greek depictions of these gods flying around in winged ships, or UFOs, for want of a better term.
Yeah, sounds like the plot of Independence Day, the movie with Will Smith. Yeah.
That's right.
We've just about a minute left, Tom, to wrap up.
The bottom line is 2012, the serpent rope emerges from the center of the Milky Way. Quetzalcoatl returns to mark the end of one age and the beginning of another. And I would just tell people that there's a surprising part of my book, Nephilim Stargates, the Year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers, in which I have a guest chapter by David Flann, who ties the Year 2012 and the Return of the Quetzalcoatl with the Roswell 1947 event. It's an astonishing chapter. He's one of the most brilliant guys I've ever met. I'm not smart enough to explain what Dave gave me for the book, but it will blow people's minds.
I've had the opportunity to interview Dave in a previous position about his article tying the 1947 Roswell crash to the year 2012, and you're right. It's like Glenn Beck. You have to wrap your head in duct tape to keep it from exploding, because it's unbelievable, but it's beyond mathematical chance. Nephilim Stargates, the Year 2012, and the Return of the Watchers. Tom, where can people find it again?
They can get it anywhere. Go to the local bookstore, Barnes & Noble. They can get it on Amazon. They can get it at RaidersNewsNetwork.com. They can get it at SurvivorMall.com. Just any bookstore, just go in and ask for it by name.
All right, Tom Horn, always a pleasure to have you on the Eagle 93.9. Thanks.
Derek, you're a great friend and a scholar. I love you. Thank you.
Take care.
Over 6,000 years ago, the citizens of Mesopotamia encountered them.
Down through time, tens of thousands of people on every continent of the world have etched their likeness on the walls of caves, chiseled statues of them from solid stone, and prayed prayers to their highest gods to be delivered from them.
But prophecy says they will return. And at a time when Babylon, modern Iraq, and Iran is invaded and destroyed. This spring, exclusively from RaidersNewsUpdate.com, we'll tell you what you need to know about them. In the book-length ebook, Stargates, Ancient Rituals, and Those Invited Through the Portal.
In the 14th century, the Black Death killed nearly one-third the population of Europe. In 1918, the Spanish flu killed as many as 100 million people. The next great plague may already be spreading. Inspired by today's headlines, it's the Armageddon Strain, the explosive new thriller from Sharon K. Gilbert. At a laboratory somewhere in the desert southwest, a secretive group has created a deadly virus for a single purpose, to eliminate 90% of human life. Standing in their way is Dr. Maggie Taylor, a woman broken by grief and alcohol, who must somehow find the strength to unravel the mystery of her father's death in time to stop the virus from being released. Infuse magazine says Sharon Gilbert has a talent for making you feel good, scared, on the edge of your seat, and dying for more. And Christian Fiction Review says Sharon Gilbert does a very nice job of building suspense and horror step by step. The Armageddon Strain from Sharon K. Gilbert, the newest release in the Myth Arc, the ultimate battle for mankind. Available now online and at bookstores everywhere.